Or hasn't good come of your obsessions?
At first, but I followed them too long. I am their slave. And one day they will choose to destroy me.
If you understand an obsession, then you know you won't change my mind.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome to the Dragonreel podcast. This is episode 34. We are going to discuss the maybe a fantasy movie, The Prestige, from 2006. I'm not a magician, I'm a wizard. I'm Chris. And a lovely assistant is the most effective form of distraction. And here's mine, it's Sharon.
Wait. Am I a distraction or lovely or both?
Yes.
Smile and nod, wave your hands around, and catch my handkerchief, baby.
I'm smiling and nodding and nodding.
And he cares about the man in the box. It's Matt.
Yo.
That is a good Alice in Chains song.
I see where you went there.
And the secret impresses no one. Pete, he impresses me.
Thanks.
Wait.
You impress me, Pete?
I thought he cares about the secret.
No.
So we
the secret impresses no one.
I have so many things to say about this movie. Watched this movie twice. This is the first time we watched a movie twice after taking notes and then like
pray going, carry on.
I've watched this movie more than twice.
We watched it twice this week. Yeah.
But I watched it maybe 6 or 7 times before this weekend.
So anyway, before we get started, I want to remind our audience that we have a drawing where you can win a $25 Barnes & Noble gift card just by giving us a note and saying that you have written a review for our podcast, The Dragonreel, on iTunes. And that's because we really need your help to get the word out. A lot of the other podcast podcatchers use the iTunes algorithm to suggest other podcasts to people. So we want to get the word out. So get the word out. Go and write a review on iTunes. Send me an email telling me which review is yours. The email is dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com. And that's real with 2 E's, if you don't know that. How did you find us in the first place? And we're going to do a drawing on March 21st, which will be the first day of spring. And it will celebrate the coming of spring, and it will be the coming of a $25 gift card at Barnes & Noble for
Excellent.
You.
Excellent. So who's summarizing The Prestige?
So, you know, Matt chose this movie, so I'm going to ask Matt to summarize this movie.
We just sprung that on him.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so that this is the most complex and thoughtful and intelligent film ever made, and that's really all you should know, but it is the tale of two rival magicians throughout their lives as they try to one-up each other, which ultimately leads to obsession and destruction. It is, let me think, I mean, it is the movie the Nolans made right before The Dark Knight. So it was right before they hit really big, and is unfortunate because I think it could have been Inception if it had come out after The Dark Knight kind of thing. It would have been, what have they been lauded for? Because it truly is their best film.
Okay.
I think that was a very
synopsis. I think it's a very synopsis. It's a very efficient film.
Wait, what do you mean efficient?
I mean very Prussian, very German. No, I mean it's there is very little wasted in this movie.
There is not a single moment that is wasted. There is, and so much to the point you don't even notice. Like there, yeah, it is very efficient. But that sounds like you're not making fun of it, but you're dismissing it. Like it is.
It's got layers.
I'm not dismissing it. This is a tight script. There's no fat.
Yeah, nothing. But it's. Yeah, it is an athlete. Like, there is no wasted motion kind of thing.
But you don't realize it when you're watching it.
No, you really don't. Like, as I've said, I've watched it 20 times, and I still discovered something new this time. And
so I think,
study this.
I think he was still high off Memento, and I think showing all of the story out of sequence, like giving you this element because now you're ready for this part, then giving you this element because now you're ready for this part, I think that works here, but I think it could have been a little bit more in order.
That's actually one of my notes, is like how many timelines are actually going on.
So I just want to say that as a blind person, that was confusing.
It was confusing as a sighted person.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Pete, was it confusing?
I didn't think it was so much confusing as very jumpy, mm-hmm. but that's, I don't know whether or not that's necessarily a confusing thing. It's nice to know the fact that it helps drive the tempo and keep it tight.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see where if you're not being able to see everything, because this is, I mean, it's a gorgeous film. If you're not able to see everything, you might not be getting the full effect of the jump. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I don't know when he went to America. It's really confusing for me.
So let's talk about the segments and put them in order.
He went to America in February of 1899. They said so in the movie.
But yeah, okay, great.
And yes, and the symbol was that he had the cane then at that point, so I can understand why you wouldn't have caught that.
Okay.
Yeah, there are little visual cues like that. But other than that, I mean, okay, the film is visually nice to look at, but it's not really visually spectacular.
No, but it is gorgeous in its own right. I mean, it's got a lot of really good... The way the use of color, the use of shadow, the use of lighting in general is just really, really tight.
The fact that it shows... The first hint is all the hats, all the magician's top hats, just laying in the field. And you're like, what? And then it just moves on. Which it tells you the secret right there.
Yeah.
I mean, at least hints at it. So, I mean, yeah, it's very efficient as well.
Right, that's the thing. It's like everything is a hint at it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and even the little boy says, you killed the bird.
Yeah, I'll play that one here.
Oh. I mean, and then you never see that little boy again.
See? He's all right. He's fine. Look at him.
But where's his brother?
Yeah, but where's his brother?
Wait, do you have the timestamp of when that was from the movie? Like, how early was that in?
I don't, but it was...
His brother's in jail, obviously. Oh, wait, sorry.
No, that's when the bird was killed.
I know I was making a joke.
Oh, you're making a joke.
The way that the bird got killed was by it being entrapped in something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way that the one brother gets killed is the fact that he's the one who gets caught and trapped.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to discuss which one that was at that point.
Well, let's go back a little bit further, and we recapped and we said what happened, but we didn't really say what happens. So the two magicians are Borden and Angier. And
can we call them Wolverine and Batman?
We can, but I'll get confused with that because then you've got Alfred and Black Widow and Gollum, and it just gets really weird.
Well, he's also Ulysses Claw, so I mean he's at least
you're
MCU.
Right. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
So, yeah.
And Rebecca Hall, let's not forget her.
And you know, really, both men are quite despicable.
Yeah, she's Maya Hansen. She's Amos' number one gal.
So initially, they meet doing like being the plant in an audience for a magician who just seems to walk around something and never really do anything.
Mm. Played by the amazing Ricky Jay.
A lot of famous people in this movie.
Ricky Jay is not only a famous person; he's an incredibly talented magician.
Oh, is he really?
He is really.
I have never heard of him.
He does look familiar now I think about it.
There are some really, really... he passed away recently.
Ah.
And there's a wonderful, I think, documentary about the fact that he meets up with this one publicist in a diner, and the diner doesn't have any air conditioning. And she's starting to perspire, and he's starting to perspire, and he reaches underneath his napkin, and he pulls out an actual block of ice and puts it on the table to cool her down.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could do that. I just choose not to.
Right.
Well, if you do, you could probably do that for a lot of money on stage. I'm just saying.
Let it go.
So, hey, David Bowie, Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackson.
Jackman.
Sorry, I messed up his name.
So initially they are schlepping for another magician, and then Angier's wife dies, and
because of Borden.
Yeah.
Probably
because he does
because
the knot that he wasn't supposed to do.
Honestly, I think because everybody else had forgotten how the trick works. That's why she died.
What?
Well, okay. Cutter explains to the judge. This here is a trick lock. The person in the tank is supposed to free their hand, reach up through this panel, and pull on and open the lock, and then they can get out the top. Well, instead of running out there with an axe, why didn't they just pull the lock off and flip up the top and get her out that way?
Hmm.
Hmm. Did they forget how the trick works?
I don't. I mean, he is explaining it for a different one, but I can understand how they would be using the same tank. Because he does say that it has particular significance.
Right, he explicitly says it's the same tank. So.
Well, maybe he meant a tank like this.
Don't poke holes in this.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, that's...
Chris, there were a couple things.
Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed this movie, but there are a couple of points that I sit there and think, ooh, that could have gone differently.
Well, I've got a couple of those, but I've got a... Wait a minute, what about this? What if you watch the movie this way?
Ah, lay it on us.
What if Tesla's machine never actually duplicated anything?
What do you mean?
Well, when do you see the machine being duplicated? When do you see Angier being duplicated?
When he tests it out for the first time in London, and then the other one walks up and he shoots him.
Right, and what's the other time? When he does it on stage, the first
time.
Both of those are in his diary that Borden is reading. So maybe that's a lie.
Then, why are there all the bodies at the end?
Yeah.
I don't know why we're shown the bodies. It's possible that the movie is lying to us.
Okay.
Because movies will sometimes do that. Like, The Village actively lied to us. So, I mean,
I guess the biggest one was the one that was also brought up on IMDb, which is, if he's already got a double, why don't you just use the same trick that...
Yeah, that's the other one. It's like, he had a double, and the trick was working just fine for a while, and then the double got all, snooty and...
Drunk and snooty.
Yeah. Okay, I was wondering which he that we were talking about here.
Yeah, no, sorry. Right. So if Angier is cloned, why shoot the clone? Why not just go, oh, hey, you know what we could do?
Right, exactly. Because his problem with doing it the first... He was doing the trick and it was working. His problem was that he was not accepting all of the applause himself. Now, if he had duplicated himself, he could have taken turns.
Yeah, exactly. Just like Borden did.
I'm
quietly golf clapping because I never thought of that before. But that would have apparently involved trusting someone, which no one... they trusted each other.
Why can't you trust yourself?
Right.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know him, and he is an a-hole.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's you. I mean, I would trust me. I love me.
Because they have exactly the same goal.
I wake up with myself every day. Sometimes I even take myself out to dinner.
It's just, they have exactly the same goal.
True. All right.
Yeah. Well, back to the duplication thing. All of the duplication that you see on screen is Borden reading the diary. And we know for a fact that that is a whole setup for Borden to read. And it was a setup so that Borden would be convicted of his murder. Now, let me kick a ballistic at you. What if the duplication never happened? The only trick he really learned was how to look like he's drowning. And there's actually evidence for this. After Julia drowns, he is shown putting his face in the water, trying to drown himself.
I don't think he's trying to drown himself. I think he's timing out how long you can hold your breath.
Exactly. So that's what I'm trying to work toward here.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So Chris thinks he's doing that.
He's working on the trick of how to drown.
But doesn't... Wait, didn't Cutter have to... Not Cutter. Is it Cutter?
Cutter.
Didn't Michael Cutter Kane identify him?
Yes, but if Cutter was in on it, then it would...
But Cutter was so disgusted by him
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that's what happened.
I know this is not a perfect theory, but the only time... I mean, it bothered me that the only time you saw it was in the flashback that Borden is reading.
Oh, I see.
See what you're saying?
I see why you would doubt that because of the source.
Yes.
But given the weight of evidence against it, including the dozens of dead bodies and tanks at the end, I think that's kind of a...
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a giveaway.
Yeah. Well,
Shining level conspiracy there.
Yeah.
It is, and I think the problem that this movie has is it suffers from a Kaiser Soze bit.
Oh, no.
Because getting 70 or 80% of the story from diaries, both of which are set up as tricks.
True.
By the writers, yeah.
By their authors. So
yeah, okay.
I'm not sure how much of what you're actually hearing really is part of the story that happened.
In
the book, Cutter's more of a narrator. So I know we're not supposed to mix the books with the movies.
I do want to know, what did you think? Which did you prefer? Because I've never read the book. And I read the synopsis and it was like, that's stupid.
I read the book after I saw the movie the first time.
Mm-hmm.
The book has a couple of meandering red herrings that didn't need to necessarily be in the narrative, but the movie's adaptation removes them.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the same story, it just doesn't take as long.
And there's no spirit that's going to go take over, and
no,
and it takes out the descendants.
No.
Yeah.
So in the book, Pete, the machine is real, right? I'm just wondering. The machine duplicates, right?
There's definitely evidence that the machine works.
Okay.
Which is why Cutter is so keen on having it destroyed.
Right. I also think that Cutter's disgust at Angier makes the theory that the machine never worked, it makes it less likely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But okay. What I don't understand throughout the movie is whose side is Cutter on? Because it seems like at the end he's on Borden's side.
At the end he switches. There's a lot of switching of allegiances in this movie.
Well, yeah, but you got to realize that Cutter, I think Cutter basically lays it out for them at the beginning that he's on board with whomever will hire him.
I'm going to disagree. You know? I think he was with Angier the whole time.
Yes.
Up until he found out what Angier had done, and it so horrified him that he let Borden in, and then kept the daughter for Borden to come and collect at the very end, which is why he was telling that story as how the magic framed.
I agree with you, Matt. I agree with you. Yeah. So
it could well be.
Say that again. It's so rare that I hear that.
You're right.
I agree with you.
Well, you could be right.
So,
or we could all be tricked because we weren't watching closely enough.
Well, there were a lot of, this makes sense to me because I'm with three men here. So some of the romances in this. So Chris doesn't understand why Sarah kills herself in the end.
No, I understand why she does. I just think it's a weak reason and that her character is not developed enough for that to have meaning.
I completely disagree. She was really in love with him. And to live like that...
That was a question that we were talking about. Did she know that there were twins?
So now that I saw it for the ninth time, no, she did not know.
So when she says, I know what you are, what do you think she meant?
I think she thought maybe he was schizophrenic. But she still loved him. But I don't. She did not know the secret.
So I think.
Then why did she kill herself with the birds? Was it because of the magic, or was it because?
Because she said because she knew he was having an affair. She knew that she is very intuitive. She's a lovely person. I loved all the parts when she would say, you know, and I can tell when you mean it. And she would say, and today you really mean it. But there was another time when she said, today you love magic more than me. And it was because it was Freddie at that point. And going back and rewatching it, you know, now I can say, okay, so at this point, this is her husband, the man that married her. And at this point, it's the brother. And
so that same scene, the first time she says, you don't mean it today maybe you love magic more.
That's Freddie.
We also know that's Freddie because that is when she says that she's pregnant and he says, oh, we should have told Fallon.
Yeah.
Because Fallon
was the father.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You don't know. I assume they're both having sex with her.
Okay. We had a conversation and I had a long about that debate too. About this. Okay, I'd like to think no.
You'd like to think that, or
there's no proof either way.
Well, I think there is, because Borden has total devotion to his art.
So what, you think they are having sex? You told me you didn't think they were.
After I thought about it, it doesn't make sense that they could never. I mean, I would imagine that Freddy probably doesn't like to or doesn't want to or, you know, tries to avoid it. But I can't imagine that he can always be in a situation where it's not, where it's possible to get away.
No, women back then weren't very demanding of...
How would you know?
I don't know. Books, you know, to be...
I think they were at least a little bit demanding because there's people around today.
No, to be a good woman. Yeah. No, but to be, you know, a woman of that time, you sort of just thought of the queen. And if you were in England, I meant.
And then no one would have sex.
You did your duty, but I don't think it gets my engine running. You have to remember that it really is a more modern idea that women are equal to men. In the 1800s, you know, women were not thought of equals to men. Women didn't even vote. I mean, so you did what your husband told you to do.
But they were queens, but they didn't vote. Yes. No. I understand what you said.
So I think we're coming from a different mindset in 2019 than you know. It's just a theory that I have, but I would like to think that both men, they played each other, but that one of them loved Sarah and one of them loved Olivia in the true sense of the word. And that's why I think Olivia says, remember, I told you not to talk about your family, you know, when you're here.
Oh, yeah, she says that. So she's obviously talking to Borden at that point. Mm-hmm. Ah, this is confusing.
It is confusing.
So wait, which one do you think ultimately ends up with the kid at the end?
Oh, that's Freddy.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Freddy survives. Alfie dies.
Poor Alfie.
Wait, why do you think that?
Because I think Borden says to him, you're going to have to live for both of us now. Like, you know, it's not something you say to the guy who's
winning. I'm sorry. I said it wrong. Alfie lives. Freddy dies. Because Freddy, going to the gallows, says, I'm sorry about Sarah. Because Sarah died and Alfie was left alive as a widow.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, I
knew which one was which, but I had them wrong.
It really is the father.
So, okay, that's good. That's the happy ending, because I didn't think there was any happy ending to this.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, because he lost his wife, and so the man that's alive at the end is one that lost his love.
And that would make sense. That's
his daughter.
But it would also make sense that Freddy was the one who was driven to know the secret, so that's why he went up on stage while he went back and to figure out what it was and fell into the trap. Because he was the one so fascinated by magic.
I didn't think of it like that.
Because
I guess I thought they both were.
Well, I mean, they obviously both were. You don't live that way. You don't chop off part of your fingers without being disciplined. You know, like, you were devoted. But... Yeah, which was like another, and so I do a blog post on screenwriting and how like they work for stories. And one of the best things that is used in this movie is they hide all the clues and character moments. And so the moment she's like, like your fingers are bleeding again. It's just like the same, you know, the day that it happened.
Yeah. Just like the day it happened, right.
And, but you know, it's like, oh, there's strife in the marriage. Oh, they're having a hard time. That's what you're picking up on.
Yes.
But it's like, there's this big fat clue just laying there in the middle of the room. It's so disguised well in a character moment that you don't even notice.
Absolutely. And I also figured out that, we said this before we started recording, that the man that tied the knot for
Julia.
For Julia is not the same guy when Angier is holding the gun and saying, which knot did you tie? That one really didn't know. So it gets confusing. Sometimes you don't know which one is which.
Right, but he also said he didn't know when he went to the funeral. So it's the one who killed her with the knot didn't feel guilty to go. The other brother did. And so he didn't know. So the one who felt bad and wanted to make an appearance and is like, but I didn't know. You know, it was also the one who paid the price for it when he got his finger shut off.
Yes, and that's also...
Yeah, so I think Alfie tied the knot. Freddie went to the funeral. Freddie got his fingers shot off.
Yes.
That's what I believe happened.
And Freddie died.
I don't know which one's Freddie and which one's Alfie.
Freddie is the one that loved Olivia. Alfie is the one that loved Sarah. So Alfie is the one that loved Sarah because they say it at one point. So always Alfie is the one, when you go through and watch it again, Alfie is the one that when he says he loves her, he really means it.
Right.
And
okay,
Freddie...
Right. She tells you when it's Alfie and when it's Freddie.
So you get those clues, like, sometimes. And then you can figure out other times by piecing it together that it wasn't the same guy that tied the knot that said he didn't know.
This movie has been out for, what, 13 years? And we could still be like...
Oh, my God.
Trying to figure things out. And it's like I said, I've watched it 20 times and it's still like, wait, which one was this guy? And, the thing I noticed this time was that Angiers was actually a lord. And so in the very beginning, when he was like, oh, I'm taking on this American, like, so as not to embarrass my family, he was telling the truth.
Yes.
Exactly. I never figured it out. I was
I got the line right here. I saved it because of exactly that reason. I didn't know if anybody else had picked up on it, but here it is.
You're pretending to be someone else.
I don't think changing a name compares.
Just your name, it's who you are and where you're from.
Because I promised my family I wouldn't embarrass them with my theatrical endeavors.
Boom, there it is.
I think that might be the only truthful moment in the whole movie.
I
do too, which is why I started going by Pete instead of Peter.
Can you play one of Sarah's lines?
Because I got the one that we were talking about earlier.
Say it again.
I love you.
Not today.
What?
Well, some days it's not true, and today you don't mean it.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, that's hard.
Yeah,
I could not imagine. To some extent, it's always true a little bit in a marriage, but not like that. Well, I mean, you know, sometimes Chris will go, I love you, but he just wants me to get out of the room. And I know he kind of loves me, but he'd rather be painting or something. So, like, he loves me, but he doesn't love me, you know, I think.
Wow.
Is that too much?
There's the condemnation of my entire
life. I'm just saying that. But she is going through like 1,000 times that.
Like every other day, yeah.
Every other day, it's the brother. And so I don't think they are. I don't think they are being intimately romantic when it's the brother.
Okay.
I don't think he's interested because he'll say, "Oh, I gotta go." And then the kid one time said, "But we were gonna go to the zoo."
And I'll let Fallon take you to the zoo. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gotta be. You think they would just have a system? It's like, hey, I'd really like to go out tonight. And okay, have fun. Like I'm gonna go sleep with my wife.
Yeah. Unbelievable. And that's why when Batman is reading the journal, because I can't. I'm sorry, I lost the.
Borden Bale Batman.
Yeah, Borden Bale
Beats
Batman.
Bears, when, Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica. When he's reading the journal, and Angiers says, you know, Borden doesn't know sacrifice. And Angiers is like, yeah, right. I mean, he doesn't say, yeah, right.
Well, Borden says it takes total devotion to the art, something, something, and a lot of self-sacrifice. And the next scene, Angiers says, what does he know about self-sacrifice? Because Angiers is sacrificing himself every night on every show.
But I don't think that had happened yet when he...
No, because that's in the journal.
Oh, confusing.
It's part of the setup.
There, you know, neither guy is likable. I'm just saying, if I was married to either of them, I'd be like, see ya. Because they're kind of both really, really selfish dudes.
And all right. The whole movie is about obsession.
Which is what it comes down to, honestly, is the fact that they're both fairly irredeemable guys.
So why do we like this movie so much?
I would disagree that they're irredeemable. This might speak to an author kind of thing. Like, yeah, they're trying to balance it and, you know, family and their obsession and the creative thing that they have to do. Like, you don't choose those things. You just have to do it. And so they're trying to balance it. And when something throws it off, on either part of the balance, like, you know, losing a wife, let's say, because the other, someone, you know, another person, like, you can't stop picking at it. You have to, like, keep going. So, like, you know,
How do you still splitting a life with a person who literally drove your wife to suicide?
Well, that one's a little further into it at that point. We're
not unpacking that.
No, but it is, like, you can see them at, like, 20... Which is another thing that's kind of, he was like, oh, my trick's not ready yet. And like, why not? You could have done that like at any time. Just
good
need to build
point.
A name
yeah.
first.
That,
I think that was actually his thing, is that he wanted to have an audience first. He wanted to have a following.
Fair enough.
Maybe, okay.
He wanted to be able to fill out a theater before he performed the show.
Right. And trick. But you can see this
he really fills out a theater.
Oh, wait, before I forget it, you were talking about obsession and that his wife died.
Four men.
But there's one part that happens where I think he's talking to Olivia, and Jira's talking to Olivia.
That'd be a crime.
And he says, forget about my wife.
It won't bring your wife back.
I don't care about my wife. I care about his secret.
Right there. Okay, mm-hmm. So I liked him when I actually thought he loved his wife so much.
I also think that's the point at which Olivia no longer liked him.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
That's where she lost respect for him?
Uh-huh.
Well, also, I mean, I am not trying to forgive him at this, but how many years later is it at this point? You know, and like, yes, he's going after the wife, but, you know, things happen after that. You know, he's still on the same course of his career. And, like, his wife's been dead how many years now? Like, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that he's not upset and not still motivated by her somewhat, but, yeah, at that point, his profession is being taken from him.
Yeah. So. Well, and I guess I really dislike Angier because, I mean, they're both kind of liars, but Angier is also a murderer, too. But Angier acts like he loves Olivia at that point, but then he's basically sending her to go, and he knows that... It seems obvious later that he knew that she might have to sleep with him to gain his trust. And he's like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
As long as you get the secrets.
Yeah, well, women were pretty token in this. It was a different time. Sorry,
you know,
me.
Back then they had to, you know, they didn't even vote. They
had to think about the queen.
Whoa, call
yeah,
back.
You know.
Are you guys mocking me? I'm just
yes,
saying.
Yes, I'm openly mocking you.
I know.
No, yes.
15.
But also, they weren't, the women in this had strong roles too. Because
I don't know if I'd say that.
I think they had very insightful roles. Number one,
I think
Sarah
they had
knew
purpose in
something
the script.
Was going on. Also, Olivia would say, I saw the trick, and what did she say? Well, she was actually wrong. She said, it's the same man. And
she
it wasn't
double.
The same.
She said, like, he's got a double. And like, that's too simple. Was that Cutter?
No, that was Cutter.
Yeah, Cutter was saying it was a double. She said, it's the same man. You can tell because his fingers are...
because they both chopped off their fingers.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of complications in this. I mean, we didn't see enough of the wife to know if she had... a strong character, but Julia.
I think she did have agency at least. She was like, no, I can do this. Not, I'm good. Like,
yes,
you know,
I can
do
it.
Do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they at least, but yes, the women definitely serve the plot in this. There's no way around that. They were, you know, they might serve the plot in interesting ways, but they were there to die. They were there to be fridged, literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, all three of them. Yeah. Wow,
yeah.
I didn't think of that.
Well, Scarlett Johansson survived.
Yeah, yeah, and her character was sort of redeemed at the end because she, when Freddie was telling her that he never really loved his wife, which was true at that point, I mean, because that was his sister-in-law, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's like, that's so... You know, you could be
that's
sitting
so
here
cold.
In a restaurant. That's so cold.
Yeah.
So I felt that she actually, even though she was the mistress, she redeemed herself by saying, no, I've had enough of this, and I'm out.
And she got out alive, which, you know, not many people did in this. So that's...
Yeah.
That's true.
If you include all the Angiers, it's a hell of a body count.
That is the darkest thing we can think of, because he is literally killing himself each night. He's not killing the double like the first time. He kills the double the very first time and goes, oh crap, well, I'm dedicated enough that for my revenge that I will kill myself every night. I will be the one in the box. Like,
right.
Willing, like, that is dark.
Yeah, that's really
he goes to his death not knowing 100% if the machine's going to work that night.
Yeah, it's just so...
Pull on those threads, right?
Yeah, I mean, and so that's why I don't think that, you know, oh, I have a duplicate. It's not about the trick at that point. It was about trapping Borden. It was specifically about sending Borden.
Totally,
and so he would kill himself a little bit every day to do that and, like, have no problem with it. So that's why he didn't go with the double. Like, oh, now I have a double. I can, you know, do the trick. It wasn't the trick anymore. It was revenge.
Yeah. And 100 times. Now, Chris was arguing with me.
Well,
that
we don't know which of those 100
times. Was it the
100th
time? No. Was it like.
Probably wasn't the
100th
time.
The 60th time. Or...
Right.
Yeah.
It might have been like 16 shows in. It might have been 70 shows in.
And blind character, but you only saw him for a second. Because the whole reason he was there was because he couldn't see what was in the tank.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So where did they get another tank made every single time?
They go to the tank store.
I don't know. I just thought of that one time. Another possible plot hole.
I've got to go down to the tankery today.
So,
the tankery and tonic? No, I'm sorry.
Did you already say this? Why did there have to be a tank?
What do you mean? Oh, for the whatever you call it, dramatic irony? Not dramatic irony, but you know, the sheer.
But the audience didn't see anybody falling into the tank. That was. Only
well, it was so for... Cutter said in the trial that it had been used in the earlier part of the show. We don't have to see it. We don't care about it.
Right. No, but he said that Borden had moved it underneath it instead of the what he was supposed to land on.
Right.
He had moved the tank under there instead.
How do you think Mr. Borden was able to move the tank under the trap door without anyone noticing?
He's a magician. Ask him.
Sorry.
Dang, you really got all those quotes. I mean, you got that. That was fast. Quick on the draw.
I was waiting for that one.
Do you have any from Scarlett Johansson?
She didn't really have much purpose. I mean, other than she was really a prop. Really,
Zap.
In this.
Okay.
Zap.
So I will tell you my absolute 100% favorite line in this show.
We magicians have a circle of trust.
You have a circle of trust with someone whose diary you stole?
Hands down, best line in the show.
I can see with your sarcastic nature why you would say that. I like the love stories, but I always say that. I always love the love stories.
Oh, they were tragic. They're hard
to
love.
Yeah.
Oh man, I mean, like everyone didn't get wronged, but like it just did not end happy for anyone, except for Alfie, Freddie, whichever one got his daughter back.
Alfie.
Good on you and revenge. Yeah. So really, he won at the end.
I guess
he did.
I mean, he'd lost his brother, and
it's
kind of
a pyrrhic victory, don't you think?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, because if you look at it, like, you know, they were torn between family and obsession, then the obsessive side of that half, like, got what was coming to it, because it couldn't leave well enough alone, and it paid for its sin, and then the family half got to go off and live happily ever after. Mm. And it's... I don't know. It's interesting because, you know, the Nolan's Inception is supposed to be an 8mm kind of thing. And, like, it is looking at the filmmaking process. And, you know, with each character is someone in the film, in the filmmaking process. Like, you have your director, you have a screenwriter, you know, each one on the crew is one of those things, the producer. So if you look at this one the same way, then, you know, the obsessive part of the creative process pays for it, and you know you can go live your normal family life, but you can't do the art anymore. You can't do the magic anymore.
Right, right. It's one. So, it's you have. It's total devotion.
When you said that, Matt, I just liked the opening lines of the whole movie when he says the three parts.
That's a great monologue.
The pledge.
Yeah.
The turn, and the prestige.
Yeah.
As long as you promise to play the Michael Caine part doing it, and you don't do Michael Caine doing it.
Could you play that?
Every magic trick consists of three parts, or acts. The first part is called the pledge. The magician shows you something ordinary. A deck of cards, a bird, or a man.
Or a man. Actually, that's all of that I caught, because otherwise I would have had 3 minutes of, three minutes.
Yeah. But I love Michael Caine.
I love Michael Caine, too. And this is the movie that
really great part
made me 100% love Michael Caine. I was kind of like, wow, Michael Caine's like got all these great films, and he's, you know, he's done some great things, but he was also in Jaws 4.
Hardworking guy.
There's a Catherine Wheel song where they talk about being a badass. I might have been Bruce Lee. I might have been Michael Caine. Like, nice. Man, you're putting Michael Caine and Bruce Lee together. Like, mm-hmm. That's when you know you're a badass.
You know what? Michael Caine was also Alfie.
But yes, he was. What's it all about, Alfie?
Or he meant Alfred?
No. Well, he was also Alfred. Alfred.
Yeah. And I mean, and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Like, God damn, that was a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so Chris has another argument. Is this a fantasy movie?
So if we accept that the machine actually created duplicates, then I believe it has like a toe in fantasy.
Yeah, okay, yes. That's why I picked it. And yes, I do definitely believe
it's more science fantasy than it is fantasy, but mm-hmm. I still think it's fantasy.
Yeah, steampunk-ish?
Yeah, I mean, especially that vest he wore for the bird trick.
Electropunk?
I was like, that thing needs a jetpack.
Yeah, it was kind of... so I would say, yeah, it's kind of fantasy. I mean, yeah, the toe in fantasy.
It's a toe in fantasy.
But like kind I said, it's science fantasy. Steampunk. It's not fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little steampunky.
It's the Ray Bradbury style of... Like, what Ray Bradbury did with science fiction, it's this what it did is fantasy. It was like, yeah, it's fantasy-ish, you know, but hey, I'm really telling this story. And it touches... It's fantasy adjacent.
Well, that's why we get The Illusionist then, and that's going to be my pick.
Dun, dun, dun!
Side note, before we move on, the whole the Prestige, you know, and I've totally forgot what the three acts were.
The Pledge, the Turn,
and the Prestige. I was listening, like 10 years ago, I was listening to the screenwriter, the other Nolan, the less famous Nolan, the John. American Nolan.
John?
The brothers they're 8 years difference, and so one was raised in England and one was raised in America. So John has an American accent, and Christopher has a British accent, which I think is hilarious. But I was listening to John Nolan talk.
There's some parent trap shit going on there.
Yeah. Yep. But they were asking about the Turn, the Prestige, and all that, and he was like, "You know, like, oh, it's like the three act structure." And he's like, "I just made that up. Like, that's not actually in magic."
Nice.
It just sounded really cool.
The Prestige is a magic term.
Yes.
The other two he made up.
Yeah, but the whole three act and the whole structure behind it and everything, mm-hmm. He was like, I made that up, made the story better.
Yeah.
Really?
Definitely follow the rule of three.
Yeah, it was just, that's better. And he just nonchalantly says that, and you're like, damn.
Oh, I thought that was
so
real.
Well.
Mm-hmm. And the movie follows that structure as well. The movie follows the structure of a magic trick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they show you regular guys.
They show you ordinary things, the men. Then it makes them extraordinary.
The Turn.
Uh-huh.
And then when is the Prestige?
When Fallon becomes Borden again. You've brought him back.
Oh. Okay, you brought him back. Okay.
Because the trick is when Borden...
Because the money behind the in a flash act.
Uh-huh.
It even says it's not enough to make him disappear. You have to bring him back.
Right.
So...
So he says abracadabra, and he disappears.
Yeah. Well,
and then
they
Fallon
do that.
Takes off the beard, the hat, and the glasses, and the nose, and he comes and brings him back.
Yeah, they do that many times, though. In a way, they do it with Angier too.
Yeah.
Because he starts, you know, as a regular guy,
mm-hmm.
and you know, then he's doing the magic stuff.
And then he dies in the tank.
Yes.
And then he comes back as Lord
Caldwell. And then he comes back. Yeah. So they do it.
They do it twice.
They do it many times. And if you really want to, you know, go deep into the weeds.
There's a lot of weeds to go into.
Lot of weeds, but they kind of do it with Sarah, too. If you will count the little girl. So he falls in love with Sarah, and then there's... she goes away, meaning dies, and then she kind of like love comes back into his
life. Know that's like love is
I said it
the puppy in the car the puppy is the car of love or I don't know what you're
no it's just
going
a puppy
here.
In the car of love. It's not exactly the same thing, but you see it with the birds and everything,
too. So when
you
said something about her nephew, like, it's a good thing he never comes back, because he would have seen through that shit right away.
Well, yeah, he saw it with a bird. I mean, he saw it with a stinking bird, and then you never see the nephew again.
Sure, because when we're done watching the movie.
But don't forget that Borden threatens him. He says, you know, never reveal this secret.
Wants
to know the secret.
After we watch the movie, Sharon goes, oh, it's a good thing that kid never came back.
But Pete, do you mean about the coin or about him?
Yes.
What was he...
Borden was talking about himself, of course, but, you know...
He was alluding to himself. He was couching it in the display of the coin.
All right. So their first date, Borden, Alfie, whichever combination it was, think about that one, because then he does the trick about, like, oh, I'm just going to be in your room already when you...
Right.
Okay, so
right.
Chris and I were talking about that. So we were saying, would she have known there? She just watched him walk down the stairs.
She watched Freddie walk down the stairs.
But she doesn't know there, too.
Well, right, but which one would have started the date with her, and which one would have wanted to end the date with her? Which one would have set it up so that they could do the pull-off? Because you know they planned that. And
yes.
So, because obviously they planned it, because he went up and went into the room. So,
yeah.
You know,
Freddie,
so which one wants to end the date, though? Like, think about it. Like, which one butters
her up? Freddie walks down the stairs, and then the man that loves her, Alfie, is in the apartment.
But that means that the one who loves her, or because this is their first date, hasn't gotten to actually spend the time with her.
But he already knew, because he was loving her.
I think you can extrapolate that they switched places multiple times on the date, like some sort of sitcom confusion thing.
Like on the Brady Bunch when Peter.
I was thinking about
the
Brady Bunch, but I wasn't going to say Brady Bunch because I thought nobody would get that.
When he has the vampire costume on.
Yes.
Yes.
Man, I would pay so much money to see this recut as that Brady Bunch, just that scene, the date. Oh my God.
Right. All right, so I got some questions for you, Matt. You're the expert on this. I've only seen this movie like half a dozen times. You've seen it like three times that this week. I want to talk about Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
David Bowie.
What did Tesla ever do for Borden?
Nothing.
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 You asked Matt. You asked
Matt. Then I got a question. When Angier shows up at Tesla's generator... And he says, you made a machine for a colleague of mine, and I'd like you to do one for me. Why didn't Tesla or Ali say, no, we never did any such thing?
I swear he does say that.
He doesn't.
I think he's like, we didn't, like, go away. And
he doesn't deny it.
I don't... I know he calls them on it. I know they have the discussion about that at some point. It was like... Because he's like,
he
oh, you...
say something like, they didn't.
Because yeah, it's when he's confronting him right about the cat, right before the cat, or maybe around the cat time. He's like, you know, I swear to God that Tesla says, I didn't tell you you were wrong, but I never said I did. But I might be making that up.
Okay. Well, that's one question I had. So let's say Tesla didn't say, you know, Tesla or Ali never said, okay, this you're wrong about your premise. What are the odds that... So, the whole reason why Angier goes to Tesla in the first place is because Borden's journal told him to.
Right.
The only contact that Borden had with Tesla was the demo in London.
Where he saw Borden there.
Where Borden saw Tesla's, you know, spark generator.
But Angier saw Borden sitting in the audience watching Tesla's thing.
Right. So the only thing that that Borden knows about Tesla is that his machine shoots sparks.
Mm-hmm.
So why would... So his whole plan in sending Angier to Tesla was to just get him out of the way and send him off on a wild goose chase.
I think so.
And technically got him away for 2 years, right? Doesn't
for
that what
two
he
years,
says
yeah.
at one point?
Yeah. So what are the odds that having gotten... out of the way, having been completely duped by Borden, going to Tesla, what are the odds that Tesla happens to be working on something that does exactly what Angier expects Borden had done for him?
Have you seen Tesla's inventions, or like things he had patents on? It was like an earthquake machine. basically, yeah, electricity through the air, like the whole thing about powering the whole town, I think that was actually in his patents. I didn't say they worked, just that he
made... and they did work. He was able to use that mobile light source his own lab in New York. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of the things that was confiscated by the U.S. government when they came and raided his place.
Yeah, he did some crazy stuff, and he was like, I will make this for you. I don't think he... I don't think he was already making that. I think he was like, well, okay, a mad scientist. If someone wants to make a teleporter, I'll make a teleporter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's Thursday. Got shit to do.
Again, can I just say, I agree with Matt.
So the problem is that it's never overtly said what Angier is asking for. Between Angier and Tesla, he never specifically says, I want a machine that will teleport me.
Right, because that would ruin the movie.
Well, no, I mean, I think what's interesting, if Tesla had not made the duplicator, if he had actually made a teleporter, what would have gone down?
Angier would have gone back to England with a trick that actually worked.
That's fun.
See,
he would have had to go back to that drowning trick.
I don't think they really needed to. He didn't have to become a murderer. He could have been. He could have become like the most famous magician, just with two guys, and he really could have done something with three.
I mean, if they found another actor that looks so much like Hugh Jackman to play Root, why couldn't they find another actor that looked so much like Hugh Jackman to play his double?
Yeah, Hugh Jackman's just growing on trees,
right?
You're funny.
Go pluck one. Yeah.
Plus he's you know, I mean, the man's ubiquitous. He can do anything. He can dance. He can sing. He's a quadruple threat.
You can't swing a duplicated cat without knocking down a Hugh Jackman.
You know, everybody in this, I thought...
was a jerk?
No, acted... I mean, it was... The acting was really good. I liked the music, too. I know I'm mentioning two things at one time.
Yeah, the music reminded me a lot of Twin Peaks.
I still liked it.
Well, the music for Twin Peaks was pretty good.
Yeah. Just saying. I liked it.
I didn't even notice the music. So.
Which means it did well. Do you want to get to rating this movie?
Sure.
Okay, Pete. On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate The Prestige?
I give it 4 gold and 3 silver.
Okay. Do you want to rationalize that?
I thought it was gorgeously shot. I thought it was a fairly tight movie, but it had, unfortunately, one of those things where on second and third viewing, since I already knew the ending, the only thing that I spent my time doing was looking to see how many of the clues I could make out of the film.
Right.
And not really enjoying the film like I probably should have.
I would like to point out that in viewing these clues, I found out that Harry Dresden was playing a show in London.
Yes.
The same week that Borden was performing.
It's true. Yeah.
He's on. Harry Dresden is on the bill.
You know what? I'm gonna add 2 silver to that just for Harry.
Just for Harry Dresden.
4 gold, 5 silver. Yeah.
Nice.
So that's, I was trying to ask Chris. Harry Dresden is from the books.
The Jim Butcher books.
The Jim Butcher.
Right. So he wasn't a real person.
He was not a real magician.
No.
No, you're thinking of Harry Potter. He was a real magician.
Shut up. Don't make fun of me.
Matt. On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate The Prestige?
I would give it the 5 gold, and I would add silver if you do. I don't know. Do you add silver to when you give 5 gold?
Five is the most you can.
Solid 5. You
I would, give if, it if we were rating this in terms of Michael Caine, this would be 5 Michael Caines, I think. This is... Yeah. I mean,
okay.
Can't get any higher. But and I'm actually the opposite. Every time I mean to take notes on this movie, I get lost in it. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I got to remember this for later. And like, no, I just lose myself in the experience because this is, it's probably second in my favorite films of all time, like after Empire Strikes Back. And you can't beat Empire Strikes Back because I was a child when I watched that the first time. But this is, like, structurally and everything is probably superior.
Wow. So,
yeah, I mean, that's why I picked it.
Okay, Sharon?
I want you to go next.
You want me to go next? Fine, I will go next.
Chris, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how would you rate The Prestige?
I will give The Prestige a solid 4 gold pieces. And the main reason for that, I mean, it is super tight. There is no fat on this movie, and it is It's fun to watch, it's good to watch, and it is worth watching. But there's still the Kaiser Soze problem that I cited earlier, where you're not really sure what's true and what's a lie. And I think it makes the story less valuable to me.
Oh, okay.
The story told. Because I don't know whether when to believe it.
Oh, I see.
Sharon, it is down to you, and it is down to me. No, it is down,
it's down to me.
Nice try.
It's one of my favorite movies.
Okay.
I am not going to give it a 5. I'm going to give it 4.5.
Now you're just being seriously. I mean, come on. You can
because there were some things as a blind person that I couldn't get from just hearing it. So I have to be honest, and if there are, you know, other blind folks that listen to the podcast and they say, well, is this a good movie for you know, for a whole population of people that can't see, that's why I'm saying 4.5, because there are some things that are just purely visual and there's no audio descriptive track.
Oh, gotcha.
So Chris was my audio descriptive track. So
what an iffy job he does, so that's not that.
Well, there were significant looks between you know, the wife that drowned, and like, so they do mention that Angier kisses her leg. So they say that out loud, but they never say that there was a significant look between Borden and her.
Oh, that's so that we know which one tied the knot. That's so we know which one was there.
Right, but I'm telling you, they didn't verbally say it ever. It was just visual. So
they connected a lot of dots for you. I don't think, I mean, that was...
Yeah, I'm just saying, as a blind
person.
That
was one they didn't, but I don't know if... Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things you notice on your 8th or 9th viewing.
But also, close your eyes and watch the movie and try to figure out the time sequence. I'm still confused.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of visual cues in that.
I mean, you guys said about the cane, but I don't know when he had a cane, so I still don't know when he actually went to America. Did he go out to America after Borden got shot?
He went out to America. Yes, it was long after Borden got shot. Mm-hmm. It was after he was doing the trick with his double, because he fell through the floor and hurt his knee, and that's why he's walking with a cane.
And he's got the diary at this point. So he sent her to go get the diary, and she's delivered it to him at this point.
Right. Again, noticing that it's he fell through the floor and hurt his knee is like, that's a fourth viewing notice.
Okay. All right.
But so see, how many times have you viewed? I mean, like, think about the rewatchability of this. You're like, oh, it's the fourth time I saw it. It was like, I think I've seen Fight Club this many times. I think I've seen Empire Strikes Back in the Star Wars movies this many times. Like,
I think we all agree. It's a good movie.
I marked it down just for its own unreliable narratorness.
Gotcha.
In your opinion.
In my opinion, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to believe.
The whole point of us rating is that it's
absolutely
our educated opinion.
Right. And I enjoyed this movie enough that, in fact, I enjoyed Michael Caine in this movie. This movie.
I knew it. Enough. I knew you were going to do it. I knew it.
I enjoyed him enough that I named my next role-playing game character Cutter Caine. And he was like the face who would like talk to people and explain how things were. And I tried to do my Michael Caine impression the whole time.
Oh, I'm so glad I wasn't in that game.
I'm sorry, everyone.
So our next movie is The Illusionist.
We are going to follow this up with a movie that came out the same year and had a similar theme, stage magic. The Illusionist, starring Edward Norton Jr. and Paul Giamatti, with a movie that, in my opinion, put Paul Giamatti on the map.
Well, I love
him. I'm sure he was important to somebody before that, but I saw this movie with him in it, and I was like, wow, we'll talk about that next time.
Clearly, sir, you have never seen Big Fat Liar.
That is correct.
He goes full blue on that.
He does go full blue. Which is too bad, because he's a talented guy. He doesn't have to work blue.
Well, I'm afraid I already blew myself.
Thank you very much. Oh, bam, there you go.
We're going in the weeds again.
All right, accidental Tobias. All right.
So,
So that wraps it up for this week. Don't forget to go to iTunes and give us a review. You will be handsomely rewarded. We will love you forever. You can love us as long as you like. You know, we're not picky. We're not too demanding.
And, Chris doesn't mind if you love him a long time. So there you go.
Yeah. So until next time.
Keep it real.
Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. Join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.